The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Don't dab babies. Okay?
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thank you to Matt Derrick, Chiefs Digest, joining us, talking some Chiefs football, some NFL rules proposals. The push on the QB sneak was not included in the competition committee's rules proposal, so that was dropped, which is perfectly fine. Okay, if that gets dropped. You know what? Figure out how to stop it. Figure out how to make a stop every once in a while, man. Tech says that Rod Tidwell was better off as the only client of his agent. That is true. Ambassador of Kwan. That's right. Show me the money. You are my ambassador of Kwan. Yeah. The text going back to the things that hurt Albert Lewis signing with the Raiders. Said that hurt.
People are still mad at Jamaal Charles for signing with the Broncos. I don't think you can hold that against him. The Chiefs didn't want him back. That was I give him full immunity for that one.
We've been kind of going through some of the great performances of local players in the tournament, and you know, I don't mind taking different submissions and people giving some you know, different ideas or nominees,
unless they're KU people.
No. This one comes in Nick Hollison against Duke in the 2003 Sweet 16, 33 points, 18 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 blocks. I mean,
it's pretty good.
It's pretty phenomenal. It's pretty phenomenal. Because we're talking about, I asked the question that, and sometimes my memory escapes me. You know, I was 23 that year, so, or 22, going to turn 23, so I should have a better idea of that. But just the performance last night is one of the greatest performances in the NCAA tournament, especially of, like, local players, too. Just, I mean, it's a record for assists in a NCAA tournament game. But, like, even if you look at, like, local players in the performances, we talked about Danny Manning in the national semifinal and then the national championship game against Oklahoma and his amazing 30 and 18 rebounds and, you know, block shots and a couple assists that are there and steals and just how good he was all over the floor. And he was a dominant difference maker. And we talked about Cole Aldrich's triple double and Marquise Noel last night is one of maybe it's Danny Manning and Marquise Noel with Noel, you know, dominating and controlling the game as well. But certainly 33 points, 18 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 blocks is pretty good. But 20 points, 19 rebounds, 5 steals, 3 rebounds, and only 2
assists.
Turnovers. 19 assists. What did I say? 19 rebounds? Sorry.
You did.
20 points, 19 assists, 5 steals, 3 rebounds, and only 2 turnovers. A phenomenal performance. We talked a lot about that. And a little NFL news that's come down. DJ Shark signing with the Carolina Panthers. They traded DJ Moore. Maybe that's the deal. Maybe that's what we missed. Is they trade DJ Moore to the Bears, and now they've signed DJ Shark.
Got to have a DJ.
Apparently,
otherwise
they like
music's
to
gonna be bad.
Yeah, they like to get down a little bit, huh? Just like K-State in pregame. Got to have the DJ. You got to have the little baby. Got to have the lowdown. It's working.
Really,
if it ain't
me
broke, don't fix it.
Really annoys me that right now that I'm looking at the Carolina Panthers wide receiver room and being like, oh, a couple of those guys sure would be nice in Kansas City. The pass catchers they've added have been Blake Bell and Jody Fortson. Nothing wrong with that. Fourth season always, but
yeah.
Still. A little nervous.
As names come off the board, do you start to get more concerned?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a balance of the, it's like, it's the angel devil on the shoulder.
Sure.
It's the angel of, look, he's won 2 Super Bowls. He'll figure it out. He revamped the entire wide receiver, you know, room last year. He revamped the entire offensive line, you know, a couple of years ago. Cornerbacks last year went from where they were at this time a year ago to then, you know, the guys who were playing in a Super Bowl with draft picks and things like that, and even safeties and just overall defensive backs. To now we're sitting here and going, it's MVS, it's Sky Moore, it's Kadarius Toney. I'm concerned about Kadarius Toney and the health. If he's healthy, yeah, he's pretty damn good. They may think he's a number one. He can be a number one. Health matters, though. Availability is a pretty big part of ability, and his availability has been a question mark throughout his career. MVS hasn't had a question mark about availability, but his ability is from one week to another about, you know, maybe performance 1 week to another. And Sky Moore, I think, has the ability, but he's young. And does he take a giant step forward to then be a guy who's reliable, a Wes Welker, Julian Edelman type player along those lines, right? So there are some ifs that come into this wide receiver unit, but as names continue to get checked off the board and checked off the list of wide receivers that you can go out and sign, and there's DeAndre Hopkins and Odell Beckham Jr., and it's kind of like, you know, people are wondering, are you sitting around and waiting to eventually get the price right? Are you playing the market correctly and saying, if Odell, like I said last hour, if Odell Beckham Jr. was going to get the money he's demanding or wanting, he would have already got it. If somebody was willing to pay him what he wants, he would have already signed. But he hasn't signed, and he can scoff at the Chiefs' offer or whoever's offer that $4 million ain't it. Maybe it was the Chiefs, maybe it was another team. He can scoff at that all he wants, but $4 million might actually be it. Because if nobody offers it to you, you either take the contract in front of you or you don't play. So if you want to play, the market and the teams will dictate how much they think you are worth. So are you just playing the waiting game, Brett Veach, and saying, we know there's not a team out there that's going to spend that money for Odell Beckham Jr., the way the market is, the way the teams that need a wide receiver, him to come in and fit, whether it's locker room, whether it's a team that's ready to win now, a team that's not rebuilding, a team that doesn't have a young quarterback, a team that doesn't have a new regime and coaching and everything, that some a number of these things have to be set up to where it fits in perfectly in alignment and also has the money to do that. Okay, well, now you're talking about a limited number of teams that are out there. Okay, well, we think this team, and this team, they're not going after them. We offered them this, or we've talked about that. It may or may not be something that they that he appreciates or thinks is worthy of him signing. We'll wait. We'll wait because we know it's going to come back to us, and we'll be fine. And maybe with that in the back of their mind, the DeAndre Hopkins is, we're not going to pay that much money and a draft pick for him because we think we're going to be able to get Odell Beckham Jr. for whatever money might be out there. I think that's a possibility. But in a week, if Hopkins is traded somewhere and Odell Beckham Jr. signs somewhere, then I do think there's going to be some hand-wringing and the angel devil of, well, in Brett Veach we trust versus, hey, man, you know, it's one thing to say, like, Mahomes can elevate players, but you do have to sort of give him some guys to choose from because the plan ain't to play a lot of games like the Bengals game in the AFC Championship.
Well, and yeah, and so that's why there has to be kind of a sliding scale to what concern means. So when I say I am absolutely concerned about the current state of the wide receiver group, it's because I don't want them to run into the next year with basically that wide receiver, the AFC Championship game collection of receivers, and because I don't want the entire offense to have to be completely reliant on Travis Kelce. It's because I am worried that the group is going to be a little bit worse than it was last year without Juju, whoever they're quote-unquote Juju replacement is, or if it's just relying on Sky Moore to take a huge jump, that is relying on something you haven't seen yet. So I think you can be concerned about the overall health of the group without being, oh, the Chargers are going to win the AFC West, man. I just don't know. Like, I really do think that if it was like MVS, Justin Watson, Sky Moore, and Kadarius Toney as your top four guys, obviously not in that order, but I think Justin Watson's going to be back. If it's those four guys, I still would pick the Chiefs to win the AFC West, but I would love it if there was a number one wide receiver in that group who had either done it before or you had real confidence in being able to do it or could at least be 900 and some yards that Juju was last year, who can be pretty relied upon in some, you know, first down, you know, third and mid sort of targets that Juju could feast on. So it is a sliding scale, but the issue now is the option to even just only take a mild downgrade from Juju, those options are largely gone. It really is kind of boiled down to Hopkins, which just is seeming like it is kind of trending away from the Chiefs, and Odell, who I do think the Chiefs could just be waiting out right now. I think the odds of that are decently high. And there are other guys that might end up being on the trade market who were not obvious trade targets at this point a week ago. By draft night, there could be things that change. I can't predict where it's going to go in the future, and looking at exactly where the group is right now, it's weaker than it was last year, and last year was about retooling after losing Tyreek Hill, or, you know, moving Tyreek Hill. The one other element of it that I do think is interesting that you could probably take either way is that it's not like the Chiefs have been outbid in a bunch of these contracts. I haven't seen a number for DJ Chark, but I've seen it's a one-year deal, I think. I think Nelson Aguilar was that, and a one-year deal, not very much. And then you look at the deals for, you know, Adam Thielen's 3 years. I wasn't that interested in that. That Juju deal, I thought the Chiefs would be in at that number. Two-year deal, not 2 years and 25-ish. I thought they'd be pretty comfortable with that. Actually, it's 3 years, 25-ish, and 2 years is like 18-ish, I think, actually. I thought there would be some of these price tags that I have not been balking at that the Chiefs have let go by them, which does mean they're making choices, actively choosing not to add these guys at reasonable numbers. But I don't know if it's because they're really, really bargain hunting or if it's because they think they've got an option lined up. But until that guy, whoever it is signed, I'm going to be a little bit uneasy about it.
So this time a year ago versus players in the Super Bowl in a couple of positions for this Chiefs team. This time a year ago, the Chiefs wide receiver unit was Juju, MVS, and McColl. Mm-hmm. Juju, I had to go back and look, Juju signed on March 20th with the Chiefs. And we know MVS signed, when did MVS
Juju
sign?
Signed right before the right Hill before trade, the Hill and MVS trade. Signed right after,
yep.
Basically.
MVS signs with Chiefs, date comes up to March 24th, so today.
Today.
So this time last year, so a year ago today, happy anniversary, MVS. Woo! And the Chiefs. 1 year. How about that? What's the 1 year? Is it gold or something? I don't know. Is it paper?
Time flies.
It was Juju, MVS, and McColl. And in the Super Bowl, two guys that scored a touchdown were not on the team at this time. Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney. Couple of the biggest plays. Kadarius Toney punt return was not on the Chiefs at this time in that wide receiver room. I don't know when Justin Watson signed, but that's, you know, kind of an ancillary piece. And I know you said you think Justin Watson's going to return.
1 year's paper. Gifts can include stationery, and a modern alternative is a clock.
Nailed it. Paper.
Year two, it's cotton, but China is also acceptable. Yes. Year three, it's leather.
What year is wood? There's a year where you're just supposed to give each other wood.
Year five.
So, yeah, year five, it's all exchanging
long,
of wood.
Long game.
That's right. You make it to year five, you deserve that.
Caketoppers.co.uk says, for year five, the name is wood, but a gift of silver may be more welcome.
What if it's just somebody named Silver? So Sky and KT, Kadarius Toney, on the team in the Super Bowl that were not on the team at this time last year. Cornerback room. The cornerback room this time last year was, or let's just say defensive backs, mm-hmm. that had playing time in the Super Bowl. Legarius Sneed, Juan Thornhill, and Justin Reed. That's it. So this time last year, the Chiefs had Sneed, Juan Thornhill, and Justin Reed in their defensive backs. Mm-hmm. Juju, MVS, and McColl as their wide receivers. In the Super Bowl, they had McDuffie, Watson, Williams, Cook, Sky Moore, and Kadarius Toney. A lot of that draft picks, right? Because they were able to trade up and get McDuffie by virtue of the Tyreek Hill trade. They had some more ammunition to work with. They could trade up. They could also go get, you know, Karlaftis. They didn't have to choose between cornerback or defensive end, or do we put all our eggs in this particular player's basket and trade a first and a second to then move up to pick number 18. And now we've got pick number 18 and then, you know, a late third round pick. So there's the maybe perspective, even from my standpoint, of this time last year, there was probably some hand-wringing and some consternation of, you just traded Tyreek Hill and MVS? Because I remember that conversation. MVS is your answer? Well, MVS is a guy on the team as the part of the wide receiver core to help replace Tyreek.
Right.
It's not a one-for-one plug-and-play. It's an overall that you need to figure out how different pieces are going to work in that offense. And so from March 24th last year to the Super Bowl, you had 1, 2, 3, 4 guys in the defensive backfield that played significant time, and then two players that caught touchdowns in the Super Bowl that were not on the team. So there's a little bit of the, okay, if we're talking about what they need is a wide receiver, mm-hmm. or two, and you feel pretty good about the other spots, the secondary, the linebacker unit with Drew Tranquil, the defensive line unit with people loving Omenihu's contract, Juwan Taylor now playing left tackle. Who do you have at right tackle? Can Niang do that? We'll find out. But the interior, the guard-to-guard is pretty damn strong. Tight end is great. You feel good about your running back situation. I think the quarterback will play. I think he's pretty good at what he does. And so the hand-wringing is, who's the number one wide receiver? And if you can find one guy that you can say, there's your number one, well, now you couple that with MVS and Mecole Hardman, MVS and Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney, and you feel a little bit better, especially when you've got Kelce there. So I do think it's a different position they're in now from a year ago when it felt like there were two different positional groups that you were trying to figure out. How are you going to fill those voids that are there with money, not money? Also, Orlando Brown, are you going to sign him a year on the franchise tag? And all they did was go out and win the Super Bowl. So that's the angel that's there, right?
I do think that it's dangerous to do that with the defensive backs because I fundamentally do buy the idea that the Chiefs' defense could start three rookie defensive backs, and by the end of the year, they're going to look very comfortable there in a way that just never happens for Andy Reid wide receivers. Like, I just think those position groups are so different, and the coaching staff seem to treat them very, very differently. But it would add an argument, I suppose, for Sky Moore this year. But even saying, oh, you know, Sky Moore wasn't on the team last year at this point, and that's true, and he scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl, and that's true, but he wasn't a very big part of the offense the entirety of the year. Mm-hmm. I mean, his touchdown, he was wide open on a borderline trick play, right? Yeah. And I don't want the Kadarius Toney, not on the roster at this time last year, I don't want them to feel like they have to add a wide receiver midseason. The Kadarius Toney trade, again, and I do think this is beneficial for this upcoming season, that was a long-term move that paid off in the short term as well. I think we've all agreed that if he never played another snap, it'd be worth your third-round pick. But that was for a long-term bolstering, and I really do buy the idea that he's the best receiver on this team and he can be a number one. But you still need depth around him until you really prove to me that he's not going to be a consistent injury concern.
Would there be a different feel of the wide receiver group if, let's say, you know, they go into this offseason, Juju signs somewhere, Mecole Hardman signs somewhere, and you're going, okay, it's MVS and Sky Moore, and then they trade a third-rounder for Kadarius Toney?
This offseason, you mean?
Like 2 days ago, they traded a third-rounder for Kadarius Toney to go, okay, so they're addressing it. So they are going out and addressing it, because I think Kadarius Toney's trade, at the time we discussed this, but I think the Kadarius Toney trade was also looking ahead to the offseason of what the market would look like, what their players may want, whether they would re-sign them or not, what maybe the wide receiver group in the draft would look like. So let's work ahead and get somebody that we feel like can be and grow into a number one receiver, get him into our offense. It's a long-term play, but can he help us short-term? Absolutely. So therefore, in the offseason, we're not trying to find that guy. We've already got him on the team.
I do think it would be, I think it's a good question. I think it would be perceived differently because it would be the move they made this offseason. But I still think I would be at a spot where I'm saying, okay, so this guy who hasn't been on the field consistently is your big addition. Because again, right now, the top-end talent amongst the pass catchers, once you include Travis Kelce especially, it's not terrible. It's just not very deep at the moment. It's how you get Justin Watson being the third leading receiver in terms of snaps taken last year for the Chiefs. Now, again, Toney added partway through, a lot of injuries, but like that is a part of my concern, is the durability and the belief that you've got four or five guys who Patrick Mahomes is pleased to throw the football to. He'll be in the right spot. Justin Watson could be one of those guys as long as he's the fifth one, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So I do think it would be framed differently if they just made that Kadarius Toney trade this offseason, but I don't know that I would still be waiting for the sure thing.
Yeah,
that's what I'd be waiting for still.
I think it would be framed differently to where people would go, okay, they're addressing it to some way, but there would be more concern and skepticism about it because, as you said, the view would be kind of the conversation we had about Kadarius Toney before he started to, you know, show what he can do on the field with the Chiefs, and then the Super Bowl and the punt return happens. We wouldn't have that. He wouldn't have played in a Chiefs uniform. All you would have is, okay, so you got MVS, Sky Moore, and a guy who's always injured. So it would be framed as in, well, they're addressing it. They're addressing it different ways. It's going to be free agency. This is a trade. They'll do it in the draft, and they're going to throw numbers at it. It's what Brett Veach does. It's a little taken for granted with Kadarius Toney, but it's also understanding the grain of salt that there is an injury concern with him, but it is taken for granted because, okay, we've already seen that. We know what Kadarius Toney can do. If he were to remain healthy, we know that. We'd have no idea if they made the trade a couple of days ago.
Right.
I think there would be more concern and skepticism over what the wide receiver unit would look like, but there would be more of a, okay, well, they're addressing it.
Right.
They're doing something. Whereas I think there's less concern now because we've seen Toney in a Chiefs uniform, but there's more of a frustration of, are they even going to address this? What's going on? These wide receivers are signing everywhere. Your guys are signing everywhere. And, you know, are you going to trade for Hopkins? It doesn't look like it. Odell Beckham Jr., he's still out there. What are you doing? Shark is now a Panther.
Yeah, I think that's all good logic. And I think it's why it's important to make the point that the Chiefs have been choosing not to bring back Juju, not to outbid the Panthers for either Thielen or, which I, again, would not have wanted them to give him a long-term deal, but just for the point, Thielen or DJ Chark or the Nelson Aguilar type signing, or hey, could we get Mecole Hardman back? These are reasonably priced short-term deals for the most part, and the Chiefs have said, nope, we're not in on that. And it would be very easy, I think, and I think it would be silly, but it would be easy to go, the Chiefs notice that their receiving room is kind of thin right now. And I don't have plug-and-play draft confidence for any of these guys right now, just as not as a commentary on any of the guys in the draft class, but as a commentary on Andy Reid and the Chiefs' offense. So I don't think they're happy with where their group's at right now. But they haven't done anything to actively address that, despite it all being pretty reasonably priced stuff. So it's just that is why I'm a little concerned, but I also understand that I do think there's a plan, because otherwise, if they were just looking to just slap a Band-Aid on, a lot of Band-Aids have sold for reasonable prices in this market. It's just kind of odd. So it makes me very, if we can come back to this moment in 2 months, I bet we would have a very different conversation.
Maybe even 1 month when the draft's over.
Right. Yes. It probably would be. Boy, the draft's close, isn't it? I think it starts at almost a month.
There's
right?
The corner right there. It's
right around there. It is fascinating. It is clearly the most interesting position group right now on the Chiefs roster, and I genuinely do not know what my best guess would be for what actually happens at this point.
We'll talk K-State on the other side of the break, but this time last year, as we said, Juju Smith-Schuster, MVS, and Mecole Hardman. What we didn't know behind the scenes until it was reported and it came out that, while they had those three guys, they were trying to trade for Kadarius Toney.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were trying to trade for A.J. Brown.
Yep.
So they had interest in bringing guys in, even with those three guys already on the roster, with Juju, MVS, and Mecole. Well, now it's MVS, Sky, and Kadarius Toney. Well, you think this year they're just going, oh, we're good. We don't need to reach out and see if anybody's available or some of these other trades or things like that. We're good. We'll just go and draft somebody. Of course, they're talking to different teams. And there might be a player right now that we didn't even think was going to get traded because people didn't know that Kadarius Toney was going to be traded.
Yep.
There's a player right now that might be out there the Chiefs are talking to and working on a negotiation or something like that. And it comes out of nowhere. And it's like, oh, hey, draft day trade. This guy's now a Chief. Well, I guess they won't be picking 31 tonight.
They got Mike Evans for a third. Ooh.
What are the odds of that? Hey, Justin Jefferson for cash considerations.
A six and a player to be named later.
Damn it, beat me to it.
He's like cash considerations.
Later.
I was right there with you.
Darn it. All right, we'll talk some K-State basketball.
An
also,
NBA second round pick. Weird.
It's a salary dump. Why are they doing that?
Pick swap.
Is it a protected? Is a lottery protected?
Lottery protected.
It's top five protected pick they got
Who
for Justin
his
Jefferson.
Bird rights?
I don't
what?
Have any
Why
idea.
Did they say that?
Is that
what
Bird Man? I'm not sure.
Bird, how Oklahoma City's involved.
Bird rights are actually what he has because he's with the Eagles now.
That makes total sense.
Yeah,
we'll talk K-State. Also, the Royals have made an announcement. Zach Greinke will be starting opening day in 6 days from now. It'll be Zach Greinke on the bump, toeing the rubber, on the mound, taking the ball. Sorry. Starting pitcher, opening day. You think Brady Singer's WBC affected that? We can talk about that, too. Mick Schaefer is going to join us.
The innings and everything, and also Daniel Lynch to IL, but it sounds like not the worst it could have been. Little update there,
right,
too.
Right. We do want to update that, but yeah, innings. the lowest denominator that you can possibly have to say innings for Brady Singer. That's what he had at the WBC. Quite literally, innings, too. That's it. We'll take a timeout. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Alexa, tell the government that I did pay my taxes this year. Thank you.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Josh Briscoe and Beards. Heading up until 2 o'clock. Player pool going on. I get out of the pretty much done now. I needed UCLA to win last night. But Curtis Seabolt's got to be feeling good. Curtis, I think, is going to win it. He is in the best position to win it. He's got a number of Gonzaga players on his team, so good for him in picking the Zags. I had UCLA going farther than Gonzaga, so I had a number of UCLA players. And for some reason, I picked a couple of Arizona players earlier in the draft than I probably should have. And by probably should have, I mean at all.
Yeah.
So, that sort of set me up for a rough tournament, and I had a lot of digging out of a hole for that. But yeah, Curtis looking good, man.
I popped open a Tankathon because we're talking about Drew Timmy. I was curious if he was anywhere around here. 59th overall pick on Tankathon right now. This is after a couple of forfeited picks, actually, so it would be the 57th pick.
Mm-hmm.
Marquise Noel.
Good for him. Good for him. Curtis is in second place right now, but he's still got Drew Timmy, Julian Strother. He still has Javon Quinterly from Alabama. He's got Emmanuel Sharp from Houston, and he's also got two of the better San Diego State players. So he'll lose either Quinterly or two San Diego State players, but he still has those for one more game. So rooting for Curtis. Rooting for Curtis. I don't want anybody else but Curtis. I certainly don't want Curtis Kitchen to win it, okay? Because he's already got his tournament made with the way K-State's playing. You don't get to win the player pool and have your team do what they're doing in the tournament. You don't get both, Kitchen.
Can't pick both.
Okay? Quit being selfish, you punk.
Pick one form of to get.
Curtis's team lost to Princeton. Yeah. Let him have this. Okay? Let him have this, all right?
Once again, Mid-American Nazarene, not in the tournament. What do I have, though? Currently leading the VIP leaderboard at 18WHB.com.
Good for you.
Thank you.
Who do you have in the Elite Eight still? You got everybody available?
I honestly have really only been checking Chloe's bracket because I'm so much more invested in hers.
Makes sense.
But I had Bama, Marquette, Texas, and UConn, but in my final four with Texas over Bama.
Well, you've got three of the four.
If Texas wins it all, I'm in great shape. And if Bama does, I think Saran or Curtis probably get past me.
Okay.
Or Lebo. Well, all three of them have Bama winning it all. So.
Boy, I mean, if Curtis ends up winning that, too.
Oh, that bleep that guy.
He doesn't get, you know what?
Mizzou lost to Princeton.
He doesn't get the bracket challenge and the player pool. Back off, Curtis.
Yeah, pick one.
Back off,
pick one, forfeit the other.
Yeah, take the money.
Yeah.
Leave the bracket challenge, take the money.
I just saw the line here. VIPs don't qualify for prizes on 18WHB.com. So Curtis can go ahead and vacate that title, and I'll take it.
And why not? KenPom has Texas winning by 3 tonight over Xavier here in Kansas City. But Houston with a wider margin of winning by 8 points.
Do we need to honor our fallen sound here, or do you want to wait till Mick gets in? I don't know what you want to do.
Let's wait till Mick gets in. I want to hear some more from...
We lost. We knew we were going to lose one of Mick's nips, but the McNipples region
is... We did lose a nipple.
We lost one of them. We lost a nipple.
We lost one of them. But you know what? K-State is still dancing right now. Let's hear from Marquise Noel weighing in on distributing the ball to his teammates, the 19 assists that he had last night, and how phenomenal he's playing, and just what a spectacular performance that was from K-State, and specifically Marquise Noel. He was asked after the game was over about seeing guys on the court and his teammates and just putting them in position to succeed.
I'm just trying to get my teammates involved because, you know, a lot of guys on the team could do different things, and we are best when we all sharing the ball, passing the ball around the perimeter, and different guys is getting into double figures, you know, on the scoring, you know, category. But, you know, credit to my teammates. I mean, I wouldn't have 19 assists if they, you know, didn't make any shots. So credit to Ish, Keontae, David, Naquan, and everybody that played today for allowing me to have this career high in assists.
It goes both ways because they may not have made those shots if it wasn't for Noel setting them up in certain ways. I mean, some of those, if you're just spotted up and he passes you the ball and you just take a shot in rhythm, Cam Carter had passed you the ball. Could it have been Keontae Johnson passing you the ball and that person got an assist? Certainly. But some of those easy layups, those backdoor cuts, the dunks that were there, it's a little different when, you know, you've got somebody setting you up for an easy finish. Marquise Noel was asked, have you ever had that many assists in a game ever in your life, having 19?
No, this is probably my career high in assists, you know, ever. I had a couple games of 14, a couple games of 17 back in high school, but, you know, this one was special in front of my hometown, in front of, you know, the city, you know, that loves me. I can't even put into words, you know, how blessed and grateful I am.
He had a couple 17 assist games in high school, but he had 19 in the NCAA tournament in Sweet 16. The all-time NCAA tournament record, regardless of round, 19 assists by Marquise Noel. they were asked about the back door being open against Michigan State. A lot of back cuts, layups. Keyonte Johnson answers first, and then Marquise Noel answering the question about was it something you saw? Was it the way they were playing defense? Why were those back cuts available most of the night?
Michigan State, they do a lot of ball watching, so Keith has always told me when he drives, just keep cutting, and he's going to look for me. And we just, the IQ, I mean, the feel that we have for each other, we just showed today.
To piggyback off of what Keyonte said, let's give credit to Michigan State. I mean, they played, you know, a tremendous game on the offensive end and defensive end. It was like a Rocky fight tonight. I mean, we was going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And, you know, some guys made some big-time plays. So I just want to give a credit to Tom Izzo and Michigan State.
I feel like because it was in Madison Square Garden, he should have gone Ali Frazier. It was like the fight of the century because it was at Madison Square Garden. Rocky, I mean, you weren't in Philly. If you were in Philly, I get it. But, you know, 15 rounds by decision, back and forth, Ali Frazier. I think it was more that in Madison Square Garden because, you know, the venue and everything. But just a phenomenal night for those guys. Noel also had to return to the game after injuring his ankle. Jerome Tang was asked what he thought when he saw Marquise Noel go down.
When I saw Marquise go down and hobble off, I knew he wasn't staying out, right? Like, that dude didn't come here to be injured on his last college game. So I knew he was coming back in. And we get guys hurt at practice all the time, and we have to move on to the next thing. And every guy in the huddle said, next man up, let's go. And then, you know, everybody responded.
It is one thing to say next man up, but it is another thing to go out there and try to perform and execute. And Michigan State clearly took advantage. I mean, they went on a run, and you saw we saw the importance of Marquise Noel on the court the way that he played, but it was also further cemented and stamped when he wasn't in the game, and we saw what Michigan State was able to do in their run that they had with Noel on the bench and trying to work through the ankle injury. You saw him on the sideline. And I'll say as well with Noel that it was clearly bothering him. You saw him limping from time to time. I thought it affected him. It you know, offensively, you know, watching some of the highlights back, putting together the K-State Noel mix that we played in the first half, we'll play again, putting that together and watching the highlights, the first half, the spring and the burst that he had and turning the corner, it looked like it was a little bit quicker than the second half. And that makes sense if you're dealing with an ankle injury. But even that little bit can be the difference of a high-level Sweet 16 Division I basketball game that the other guys are on scholarship too, and they're premier athletes in the country, and they're pretty good defensive players. So that one step here, there, even a half a step can make a huge difference. And I think it really affected him on defense a lot. I think it was more defensively that it seemed to affect him because he can do some other things maybe by not being as fast or as quick around the corner. He can still do some things point guard-wise offensively to set up his teammates. But defensively, it's a little tougher. And I thought it affected him defensively there last night. But, you know.
It definitely did. And also, on that little loop-de-loop play, the ring around the rosy of the K-State variety, where he kind of, he fumbled the pass. The pass was broken up, yeah. And he regains it himself. I have not gone back to rewatch the replay this morning, but rewatching it last night, I was pretty sure his same ankle.
Yep, the right ankle.
It really tweaked it again.
Yep.
And then that was his only plant foot for the shot itself. Yeah. He never got his left foot down for that chest pass banked in three, which, by the way, I did want to, if that's lucky, I get it. What would make you think that Marquise Noel did not have perfect precision throughout that game in all forms and fashions? It's certainly an untraditional three-pointer, I'll give you that one, but the alley-oops that he was throwing, the lobs he was throwing, were perfect. So perfect that the most famous one, Keyonte Johnson, just said, I'll go ahead and take it backwards. I'll go ahead and make it a little 180. So when that shot left his hand, I actually, like, I was not thinking, that's a prayer. It's like, well, yeah, why not? Why wouldn't he just put the ball wherever he wants, despite the fact that it's not exactly a traditional pull-up three?
Also, and I, you know, we're poking
with
fun.
With a bum ankle.
Yeah, we're poking fun with Tom Izzo saying that they made some big shots and they had some other shots that, you know, weren't as big. They were lucky, you know, banking in a couple of threes. My response to that would be, well, one, I really like Tom Izzo.
I thought 90% of his interview there was all good stuff.
Yeah, I like Tom Izzo. I think he certainly was frustrated that on a night where his team played like that, that he's not advancing.
Yep.
That we played like that, we scored 93, and we just didn't have enough. And sometimes, as I've said, you're in somebody else's movie. Yep. And they were a scene and a chapter in somebody else's book, somebody else's story, somebody else's movie. And they played phenomenal, but it was Marquise Noel and K-State and what they were doing and what they're writing this year. But my response to that would be, you know, making a couple lucky shots. Get the loose ball. Because Marquise Noel got the loose ball.
Yep.
And then guard him because he was able to turn the corner with nobody near him. There's still 2 seconds on the shot clock. I don't remember a buzzer sounding. Mm-hmm. So why were no Michigan State players near Marquise Noel? Why didn't they get the loose ball? So if you want to complain about a shot that was banked in, he didn't throw a hook shot from half court because your defense knocked the ball away and he went and ran towards half court, picked it up and threw a hook shot. Yeah, I get it. No, the ball was knocked around. He went and got it, then turned the corner and had nobody in his face to be able to shoot it. And also, if he doesn't make it, there's nobody down there for Michigan State to rebound. That's another part of that play of just, you know what, I'm going to throw it up because I've got rebounders down there too. So if I just hit the rim, like I got some guys, we're going to score here on this play because Michigan State, I don't know where their players were. How about that? Get the ball. Get the loose ball. Be there. You don't want it to bank in. Get the loose ball.
Right. They made their own luck and also found some. And also Marquise Noel was unbelievable. All of that can be true.
When you bust your ass and you play like that and you work as hard as they do and you're as locked in, you say, well, it's lucky they got to that loose ball. Was it?
They're around it a lot.
Or is there a team that lost last Saturday that wasn't locked in, that didn't look like they were hustling or busting their ass on defense and didn't seem to get to loose balls?
Can't think of one.
I certainly can't think of one either. I didn't watch. I was at Disney World. I didn't even watch basketball. Did they play the tournament last Saturday?
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
You're dumb, but you're not stupid.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, wrapping up this hour. One more hour to go. We'll hang out with Mick Schaefer coming up in the next hour, and we'll play the cuts. We've got the bracket of sound, the teams that were eliminated, the sound bites that were eliminated. Also, a couple of other clips from K-State last night in the historic night. The work of art that was put together by Marquise Noel. Just a phenomenal basketball to witness, to watch. And it's not too often that I feel lucky after a game is over that I got to witness it. Not just like, oh, I feel lucky that I grew up rooting for the Chiefs because look what is going on with the Super Bowl. But lucky in that we see a performance like that and just able to be old enough also to appreciate it and have the historical precedent to understand what we're watching in real time. It was just beautiful last night.